Grant and Danny on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30 on this Monday as we wind down June. You're locked into your flagship home for the Nats and the Caps. We're going to get to the Nationals next segment. There was a story in the Post today about them not having a pitching machine that helps hitters that almost every other team has that costs $500,000. I want to dive into that. Also, the big news of the day that they're no longer the only team in baseball without advertisers on the jersey patch or on their ballpark naming rights, because today AARP became their jersey patch sponsor.
Right there on the sleeve. We're exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morod. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Adam Sandler tickets in 1 hour at 4 o'clock ahead of the Blitz. But right now, let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We find our buddy John Walton, the radio voice of the Washington Capitals, who you hear right here on the Fan. So, John, the NHL draft came and went this weekend. The Caps, center of everything. And we're curious how their haul came together, what you thought about their draft process.
Well, I think it was pretty good. I think that, you know, you're always looking at the best available players. And, you know, I had a chance to talk with Ross Mahoney at the beginning of last week, who's done 28 of these things now, which is incredible. And the one thing that you really come to appreciate, I guess, over the course of, you know, for me, 15 years and the Ovi era, we're talking 20, is that the Caps have been really good for almost that entire period. And not to say that they won it all or not even talking about playoff success, but their regular seasons have been very good. So they're always picking 20-something or something along those lines. And to be able to get the guys over the years that they have is incredible. I mean, Evgeny Kuznetsov came in the 20s. John Carlson came in the 20s. Mike Green came in the 20s. I mean, those are the kinds of guys that they've been able to pull out. So for, you know, whether it's a first rounder, Lakovic, or whether you get down the list a little bit, I am constantly amazed. And certainly all of the credit, not just, of course, to the guys at the top with Chris Patrick and Brian McClellan, but Ross Mahoney knows what he's doing, and to be able to have him at the helm for, I can't imagine there's too many teams that have had the same draft architect for the better part of three decades, and his body of work over the course of the last 20 years, boy, it really, really speaks for itself.
John, the roommates at Cap One Arena have a theme, have an idea, it seems like, of what they like and when they end up drafting. When you listen to them talk about the players, first thing that happens is positional size. They want guys that are taller than the average at their position, guys that are, have, you know, long reach, athletic, pain in the butt. That's kind of like the theme, right? They have these guys that basically grind, love basketball, and are long and bothersome to opponents. What's the theme with this set of draft picks here for the Capitals, if there is one?
Well, I think size is certainly part of it, and speed. And I think just maybe to the bigger picture for a second, I mean, this over the course of now 2 years in has been a rebuild, retool, whatever word you want to use on the fly. And the first year was pain because they didn't make the playoffs and guys left and they accumulated draft capital. And now last year it was really good because they went out and got seven guys where they really kind of upped the ante, but the work is not done yet. And the guys who are picked in this particular draft, you're looking at helping the organization in, let's say, 2 to 3 years, depending on, you know, maturation. And the Capitals generally are overcooking guys anyway, so they're going to be in Hershey. They're going to, you know, play out, you know, if it's a, you know, in the college guys that they've drafted over the last couple of years are perfectly fine, you know, going back for sophomore, even junior season. Same thing in junior where they're going to play until 20. Andrew Kristol almost made this team last year. He's going to be in town this week for his development camp. Really curious to see what he can do. Now, he's a second rounder now from 2 years back, but that's kind of the window. So the guys that you're talking about, when you are getting to what you hope is full throttle again and you've completely retooled and very likely beyond the Ovechkin era, what does this team look like? I think that's what a lot of these guys are. I think that's what they will be in a couple of years. The names that you've heard, you don't necessarily need to commit to memory right now, but I think when you're talking 2 years from now, like, okay, well, this is what happened in junior, or this is what happened overseas, wherever they happen to be. And, you know, a couple of years from now, that's when they start to assimilate into this lineup and hopefully right at the top of the National Hockey League.
Taking inventory early on in this Caps offseason, they had their draft this weekend. Free agency is just about a week away, but they have not waited to start wheeling and dealing. They've already made a trade that could change what the bottom six looks like this year. What'd you make of the move that Chris Patrick and company already made?
Yeah, Justin Shortis an interesting guy because there was no real room in the Florida organization for him. And, you know, I think at first blush, when you look at it, you're like, oh, wow, this guy's got four games in the NHL and you give up a second rounder. Obviously, the hockey operations folks see something there that is very interesting to them. And they've got him under contract now. He was going to be an RFA, restricted free agent. And so they got him under contract, and he's good for the next 2 years at a very nice price, too. I think it was $850, something like that, for the next 2 years. So I'm told he's going to be on the big league roster. They did not get him to go to Hershey. I think in place of probably, I'm guessing, and you know, until things are official, I don't want to get too far out on a limb, but if Taylor Radish doesn't return, I think that's the place that you might see him on that wing. And, you know, he had a really nice postseason in the American Hockey League. The Charlotte Checkers went all the way to the Calder Cup Final, and he was a big piece that got him there. So certainly not the big thing that they're going to do. I know unless you're a real hardcore hockey fan, July 1 isn't something that maybe moves the needle a ton, but, man, it's exciting. I mean, tomorrow at noon, the whole landscape changes, and it is going to be nuts because when you have – the salary cap going up by what it is, and you've got a lot of teams that are just going to be shut up and take my money pretty much starting at 12:01 tomorrow. The Capitals are going to be involved. I don't think there's any question about that. Mitch Marner's probably going to end up in Vegas and playing with the Golden Knights. That might happen today in a sign and trade. So a lot of exciting things that are going to be happening, and I expect the Caps to be pretty active tomorrow.
You know the voice. That's John Walton here with Grant and Danny. So where might they shop? I mean, what makes the most sense in terms of need, want, place to improve? I mean, it's a fairly set lineup, right, that you would be walking into. But, you know, where might they go shopping? Marner was a name I'd seen linked to Washington as just by way of example, John. Like, what do you think they need and where might they go?
I think you're going to be looking at forward, and I think specifically the one line that just never really worked last year for whatever reason, and there were several, was the third line where they just didn't get the offensive production. I think they're going to get a center. I think they are going to add to that third line. I don't know. I don't have a real true sense on what they're going to do with Anthony Beauvillier. I liked him. I think there's going to be a lot of interest in him as someone who played last year with Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin. That's pretty good on a resume. So I think he's going to get attention. You know, I think a guy like Nikolai Ehlers in Winnipeg, who's a really fast skater, he can really move. Somebody potentially in the top six. I think the real question, guys, is what they want to do at 3C. And when we went back to breakdown day when the season was over, the door was certainly left open for Connor McMichael to move into that spot next year. And I'm not saying that's what they're doing, but they certainly mentioned it as a possibility. So that reshapes what they may do tomorrow as well. If they go out and get somebody who they deem to be a top six left wing, let's say, that certainly sounds like Connor is going to move to center. If they go out and find a center, maybe they're going to keep with that second line theme of McMichael and Dubois and we'll call it Wilson, whatever it ends up being on that right side. They're going to get a couple of forwards. I think it's, are they swinging for the fences with one really big guy? Maybe. Or is it going to be two or three guys? But I think primarily what they're going to do tomorrow, I think, is going to involve the forwards, and somewhere in some way or another, it's going to involve the third line.
Ehlers is fascinating because he's a star. I mean, that would be a massive splash and a really significant upgrade, and a guy offensively who could send ripple effects. I mean, that would be really exciting. But it also goes a little bit against type. Like, when they've made those big moves, it's normally guys that are younger than him. I'm thinking like Dylan Strome or even PLD, right? He's going to be 29 years old, I think, this season. What do you make of him just as a fit? How would he fit in? And is that where you're saying you bring someone like him in? Now McMichael probably is the center.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the path. I think getting Ehlers into the boat, to your point, is there's a couple of things in play there. One is certainly age. And I would say, like, in a perfect world, you'd say, okay, four-year deal, that's fine, right? But for a guy like that, he's going to command probably more, not just the money, but the term. And that's where I think for the Caps and for anybody else, you're probably questioning, well, do we really want to go 7 years with this guy? And by the way, that's the last year for seven. With the new CBA, the max from another team is only going to be six moving forward. So not that it matters a ton, but are they going to, do they want to be able to commit that long term to someone who's going to be 36 at the end of it? And speed is his game for sure. Maybe, you know, if you can do it for less term, you'd probably like that if you're the Caps, but you love what he brings. And, you know, in watching guys, the playoffs after the Caps went out, I think we learned a couple of things, big picture. The Caps have, their progress over the last 2 years in this retool has been, I think, really, really good. I think when you watched round three and round four, and I'm sure that you guys did, those teams were a notch above. I mean, I don't think the Caps were, if they had gotten past Carolina, I don't know that they were honestly going a lot further. There is still work to be done. But when you look at what they need, you need play drivers like Ehlers. You need guys who can skate and are good at both ends of the ice. And I think those are the kinds of players as they continue this. And I still think this is still another year or two that they're going to be getting back to that elite status. But they're very good. And under Spencer Carberry, just a magnificent season and winning a playoff round and all of that. It's just more than on track. Ahead of schedule, maybe. But there's still some work to be done. I'll be very, very curious to see what direction that takes tomorrow.
Yeah, John, you just touched on it. For me, you've even with that third line struggling last year, you had plenty to have really good regular season success. That was awesome. The eyeballs should be, in my mind, addressing what you lacked in the postseason to catch up to a Florida or Carolina, et cetera. What's the distinction there, if there is one, or is it what's good in the regular season is good in the postseason, and kind of go into some of those elements that might be missing to be up with the big boys?
I still think they need a little bit of speed, Danny. I mean, when I look at the roster and I look at the pace of play, and even in the West Final, in the conference final, watching Edmonton and watching Dallas, man, like, I mean, that's just, you know, I see this team 82 times a year. And when you look at the teams that you don't see as much, but then you see where they are and why they're in round three, it's no accident those four teams got there. Florida was the best team. There is no question. Edmonton was probably the second best team. Sometimes in hockey, weird things happen. It's a crazy game with a bouncing puck, and sometimes it doesn't, you know, something weird will happen. Like in 2012, the Kings were the eighth seed. They won the whole thing. But I really think that it's changed a little bit, and that you can't just luck into something with a bounce here or there. When the Caps won in 18, I don't know that it was the best team they had. It wasn't the best team they had from 2015, 16, 17, 18, but they were playing their best hockey, and they played it when it mattered most, and that's why they won. There's a reason teams win. But for these four teams that I saw in the third, fourth round, like you need to get quicker. I think they need a little bit more skating ability. That's some of what the drafting process is, right? So these guys are hitting in a year or two. But, I mean, just guys who are playmakers. And that's the argument, if there is an opportunity to go big, to say, okay, we're going to bring this guy in because we expect him to really drive things for the long haul for a long time. Just one of those big, I mean, just like in the NBA, you need to be able to have that horse in the middle, right? You've got to be able to have the guy you build around. And it's not all that different. I mean, it's more of a team game when you got 18 skaters and everybody's got to contribute, but you got to have something to, like, that big piece too. And the Caps 1 through 12 as good as anybody in the NHL last year. 1 through 6 on a back end, same. But did they have, like, you know, that really top end? There's no Connor McDavid among those guys, right? So, you know, grooming one of those guys to be one of those big impact players, or having a couple of those big impact guys. If you can find one now, great. Hopefully you've drafted one here and you're able to see that come in the next year or two.
John, thank you. We appreciate the insight. Should be a fascinating day in the NHL tomorrow with the cap expanding as well. We appreciate it.
Well, looking forward to it. And guys, always chatting with you here in hockey weather. This is really nice.
Thanks. Yeah, prime hockey weather. That's right.
That's right. This is hockey Stanley Cup weather.
100 in the shade.
Yes. Out in Vegas. Yeah. Thanks, John.
See you, bud.
You can listen to John Walton on the call of Caps hockey each and every time they play here on The Fan. Ryan is a corporate guy.
Yes, he is.
He used to be our guy. He's still here during our show.
But it's a different role. It's to look over at us, make notes about our behaviors, report to corporate.
But Ryan Clary did have a show assignment. He was kind enough to take it despite his corporate obligations. Mm-hmm. He went over to the Savannah Bananas for a night out, and we wanted a full report on exactly what this is all about, whether or not he enjoyed it. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Ryan can explain it all on the Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, guys. I mean, so we went over, it was a Saturday game, 7 p.m. over at Nationals Park. And let me just say this, just to get into center field gate, took me 30 minutes. I was waiting in line for 30 minutes just to get in. There was not a single empty seat in that stadium. I got to say, I'm a banana ball guy.
There he is.
I am a banana ball guy.
I called this so
yeah,
hard.
You did, by
before,
the way.
Because
fish in a barrel.
His girlfriend's next to him. She's giddy. She's loving it. There's no chance Clary's not going to be all in after they had a blast together. He's having a cocktail watching it. She's high-fiving him. I mean, it was just so predictable.
It was predictable. I know. It was a dagger. But I will say this, though. Danny's going to hate it. He hates everything about it. Grant, you're going to love it. Darius is going to like
Grant
it.
Would love it?
By the way,
Grant would
you're
love
talking
it.
About this like we're going this week. Like well, when you say we're going to love like we would love it if we
you
went.
You would love it.
Okay. I actually think next year, I'm not spending a lot of money on tickets. I'm just telling you right now. But if I could get my son and my daughter to the game, I think I would absolutely go.
I mean, your kids would love it. And that's kind of what it's about. Like, it is curated for kids because there's a lot of, like, dance things in there. Like, they're doing TikTok dances in between innings. And all sorts of things like that. But also, they have, like, things for adults also.
Like?
Like, one of my favorites, I'm chuckling just thinking about it, is they announced this thing called Pass the Bill. And I'm like, what are they going to do? So you have people lined up at the first baseline, and they have a guy named Bill starting at, like, third base and first base, and they have humans picking him up and carry him to the next person, and they're passing the bill. I thought it was hilarious. I was belly laughing, thinking, like, oh, my God, like, this is just... It's a great bit.
So it's like Bill's crowd surfing, basically?
Yeah, Bill's crowd surfing.
On
all
the field or in the crowd?
No. On the field from third base, like they start.
Are the players passing him?
No.
Who's passing him?
It's just random fans or people who sign up for it, I believe. Like,
so people go, like you could sign up to go past the bill.
I believe so.
I think that's a good bit.
Yeah, they do. And like the one of their staples there, which I learned, was they have like this baby race. And I
saw that on TV. So just as an aside, we watched Friday night for like 3 or 4 innings. And my wife, by the way, was all in.
Oh, yeah.
My daughter, who came down and wasn't sleeping because she needed water or pretzel or something else, who knows. She sat down on the couch and watched it. She was all in. She's like, the umpire's dancing, Dada. And I was like,
yep.
Oh, it's happening. Yep. Here we go.
Well, I got to say this. The umpire was so much. Like, it was funny. Like, I get the bit and all that. But, like, he was kind of making it about himself a little bit. That was just one thing. That was one thing I did not like. The umpire was a little annoying. I thought he just... kind of doing the dances.
The umpire of the circus thing that danced was too much.
I know. That was too much. But even then.
That was too much.
Let's get to the baseball, though, because we were talking about it before. These guys are really talented. Like, the plays that they were making. There was a second baseman who went back on a ball, a line drive, like probably hit, like, I don't know, 85 miles per hour, let's say. Going back on a line drive, instead of just using his glove, he just goes up, bare hands it with his right hand. And I stood up in my seat, like, oh my gosh. And I'm with my girlfriend. I'm like, did you just see that? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, that's an insane play.
She's like, when are they dancing again?
Like, right. Exactly. Yeah. She cares about the dancing.
I was blown away is too far, but I was really impressed by the trick plays where they would go like behind their back to catch. So if you haven't tracked a fly ball to the outfield in a while, it's not that easy. So to do that, even when you're camped under it, but then like spin your whole body.
Do a backflip as you're catching it.
Well, that one, yeah, sure. That one just doesn't impress me as much because it seems like they backflip like right after they catch it. But whatever, I can't do a backflip. Mm. And tracking out fly ball is not great, you know, either. But I'm talking about the guys that do the behind the back catches. Like there's no eyes in the back of your head, Kevin Harlan style. That's pretty amazing.
They're doing these things like it's not just once per game. Like I saw a couple of guys catch a ball behind their back, like just fly balls in the outfield. He's tracking it, and then all of a sudden he sticks his glove behind his back and he makes a catch, and it's seamless.
The first baseman made this play, Danny. I forget his name. It was like Speed or something. But this guy had some name that's like a word that was athletic word.
Okay.
But he was the first baseman. He made this play where he like kind of goes backhand, but then he goes behind his back. Like a point guard with his right hand, you know, non-glove hand, to throw the ball basically to the pitcher covering first for like what would be a 3-1 put out.
Uh-huh.
the pitcher's coming over, and he has to go way up the ladder, reaching, you know, basically get on his lifeguard stand to go catch it, and comes down on the bag. It was the craziest 3-1 put out of all time. And I was like, that's kind of silly.
These guys are talented, man. They are.
Like, yeah, that's the part that, honestly, is the prerequisite that I think a lot of folks who go don't understand. These are, like, really good baseball players.
Yeah, they're not big leaguers. Right. They obviously, they're not even minor leaguers. Most of them were and didn't cut it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these guys could go play in single A or maybe in double A and, you know, to some extent hold their own. But so 1 to 10 scale, how did you feel about it?
Put me at like a 7-6. I was psyched. I really
enjoyed
it. You're going
back next year.
I would go back next year. And also, I met people. They spent $90 on standing room only seats.
Mm-hmm.
$90 just for one ticket. And they had a family with them. And they had a blast. And also, I will say this. Not only are these guys really good baseball players, they make their way up in the crowd. And they're hot.
So I was going to say this.
This is it. This is it.
This was my other point. All of these guys are hot dudes.
Dreamboat. And
that is 100% a factor here, whether anyone wants to acknowledge it or not.
This is how they cracked the code here.
These dudes, I didn't know they went up in the crowd, by the way. I only watched like two innings.
Guys, so I was in the lower bowl.
Somehow shirts are off. Yeah,
they took their shirts off.
Exactly.
And like, they have like these mat. Also,
they're
another,
called V-tapers.
Yeah, they, I mean, eight packs on eight. Right. I mean, they were
one
studs.
Of the, remember how Bryce Harper used to do like two buttons undone?
Yes,
so
of course.
His like V on his jersey would come down like just above like where my chest hair is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This one dude was batting and he didn't have any buttons buttoned. So like
it's just a vest at that point.
Right. Yeah. But it's open.
Yeah.
So like his jersey was tucked in and somewhere around his navel, like it connected, but the rest of his abs and his hotness and his sweating was just kind of out. And that's what my wife is like watching this. And I'm like looking over at her and she's like locked in. I'm like, these dudes are all attractive. Right. And she's like, yeah,
yes,
they're hunks. I mean, who says hunks, by the way? What is it, 1946?
Did she say hunks? Did she really say that?
She said hunks.
They are hunks, though.
Yeah, for sure, they're hunks.
These guys are hunks, yeah? But, I mean, stop telling me that's not a thing. Just acknowledge it's a thing.
It's 100% it.
Because there's so many women there. These guys are all like 24-year-olds with abs. Just acknowledge it's a thing and we'll move on.
They have cracked the code. It is the perfect social media storm where everybody gets something out of it, right? Like, I don't know about how I'm going to get anything out of it, but everyone else does. It's social media, which like people love scrolling Instagram more than anything on this planet. It's the attractive dudes. It's the kids bop style, whatever dances that the 9 and 10, 11-year-olds have seen. It is the perfect thing for everybody to go see.
Did the girlfriend or you, did anyone acknowledge their looks? Was she steamed up?
Oh, my gosh. The whole time.
Really?
I mean, the whole time. Like, and she told me midway through, she's like, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think I know a little bit more about the Savannah Bananas than I've said in the past. I'm like, oh, clearly, because she knows like all these players.
She's like, Rax in left field tonight? What's going on?
God, I mean, she
came up
everyone.
As an infielder, but now he plays outfield for
why
the Bananas.
Why is Rax hitting third? Whoever the coach was, she's like, what's Billy thinking?
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Like, she knew like the players and everything. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, I didn't know any of these guys.
And how could that, would it be okay in your relationship if that went the other way? Like, if you went to
you went to lingerie football.
If you went to a women, there you go. If you went to women's soccer and you're like, oh, I get stained, like number four.
Yeah, but it's not even like regular women's soccer. It's like they're all doing Brandi Chastain bits. Like, you score, you got to take your shirt off or something like that. And Ryan, like, oh, look out for number 17.
I mean, like, by the way, I follow them all on Instagram. I know all their details.
Probably wouldn't go too well. And probably wouldn't go too well.
I bet you didn't have much of an issue with it, though.
Didn't have much of an issue. No. There was a point in time where the players came up in the stands with roses, and I was just
with
like,
roses?
I'm
sure it's not a factor, by the way.
Yeah.
So now, are any of them shirtless while they're passing out roses?
Yes. Yeah. No. They were so they were playing the firefighters of the fire, whatever team they were.
Firefighters.
The firefighters. And there were shirtless firefighters on top of the dugout. And
I've seen some calendars.
Packs.
Yeah.
They were selling calendars, and that's like their bit. They sell like sexy calendar shoots of these guys in firefighter shoots.
No wonder why Ryan loved it so much.
it was a silly time.
From a corporate perspective, of course. It's good branding, yes.
Obviously. They also did a couple things while I was watching that were cool. They have a thing called Bananas Foster.
Yeah.
Where they come out with like a foster family and they raise a bunch of money, which I think is just brilliant.
Oh, that's
like,
awesome.
The marketing here is great. They had a couple charity things like that.
They had a couple things. The sponsors there, I mean, it's like all the top companies in the world. They want to be with the Bananas. I mean, the Banana Foster thing that you said, that was great. It was a really cool experience to be in the stands for that. I mean, they gave them their – I don't know if they showed it during the commercial break or anything, but they paused everything.
Who was the Nat that came back for your game?
Oh, guy.
So I saw Wilson Ramos Friday night.
No. Wilson Ramos was Saturday night then.
Okay, so it was both nights.
So it was both nights. Okay. And I did not know that. And all of a sudden they played the dun-dun, dun-dun. Wilson. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that. I was like, that's Wilson Ramos. And of course, my girl Ramos around me.
It's like the Royal Rumble.
Who's that? Who cares?
My God, that's Stone Cold.
I was like
music.
The only one who stood up in the stadium. Was like, oh my
God. So he just takes a couple ABs and that's it?
Yeah, I mean, he rolled over one so quickly there.
Yeah.
Didn't have it anymore. That's fine. I love Wilson Ramos, though. I love that.
As a quick side, remember the big reveal that Matt Williams had in store for everybody? It's Wilson Ramos batting fourth.
Oh, of course. Open
Look
the day.
Out.
Just for old times, did he get behind catch or someone throw him the ball and he dropped it trying to make a tag?
Yeah, was there no plays in the plate that he couldn't make?
No, there was none like that. There was none like that. He just had one at bat and he rolled one over and then went on his way.
All right, I'm glad you guys had fun.
We had fun.
Sounds like it was a successful evening out.
Banana ball guy.
Big banana ball
Big
guy.
Big banana ball
no
guy.
No less. Ryan explains it all. Thank you, sir.
Go Firefighters.
The Nationals. They're going to open for the Bananas if I have my way one of these
one
days.
Day.
So that people can see them play. James Wood. We're going to get you some All-Star Game votes, one way or the other. Hell or high water. I'm going to trick people into thinking they're voting for Rack from the Bananas, and then I'm going to slide your ballot in right underneath of it. Let's talk Nats. Big announcement today as far as what they're going to do on their jerseys, and also a story in the Post about spending being an issue behind the scenes, possibly. This is The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Our double play is coming up at 3:45, and at 4 o'clock, our Beltway Blitz ahead of the Blitz. So in about 25 minutes, we've got tickets to see Adam Sandler this fall. He's coming to Capital One Arena, the old Sandman, in D.C. in September on the 27th. If you want to go to that show, you better be listening at 4. Danny, big day for the Nationals. A lot of things to get to here, so we'll just go rapid fire. They made an announcement today at 11 a.m., that they are going to have jersey patches. Doesn't sound like that big of a deal. Sounds like one of those business things that fans shouldn't care about.
Right.
Except that this is not that. So it's an AARP patch. So I say that and have to keep from smiling, and there's jokes to be inserted. But they were the only team in Major League Baseball without naming rights on their ballpark or a jersey patch until today. It's just money that you've been turning down while essentially saying you're not getting enough money. So this is kind of three-pronged in
yes.
terms of what we blame that on. The Masson deal, which has been resolved. Not having naming rights on your ballpark is an easy way to make some cash. And then getting a patch. And we don't know the parameters of the deal. It could be for $1 million or two a year. It could be for $7 million a year. I don't really know. But this doesn't mean they're going to go sign an ace pitcher. This doesn't mean that Kyle Tucker's coming to play the outfield as an MVP candidate next year, like most of us want. But it is a sea change in... For their entire existence, this ownership group has said, we're not putting a patch on our jerseys until we get what we ask for. And my guess is at the middle of another losing season, the number didn't come up before a work stoppage looming. They just decided it's time to take 78 cents on the dollar. And so if they're willing to do that, are they willing to put naming rights on the ballpark? Are they willing to do other things differently? That's why today was a big deal.
Right, and I want to be very clear. This doesn't do anything. It doesn't make you play better. It doesn't make the slider snap harder or line drive contact more likely. It doesn't do anything for most fans. But the big picture is the point that you just raised. Because of the pathology of this ownership group, which has said, we believe, I'm just making these numbers up, we believe this is worth $1. And someone goes, I'll give you 81 cents. And they go, no, it's worth $1. And nobody says it's worth $1 except for them. And then they take nothing instead of 81 cents or 77 cents or 91 cents, whatever the number is. And that's been the case for many things, frankly, in this organization's history. And it's emblematic of, again, how this ownership group has done business their way. They made billions doing it their way in different industries. This one, it kind of hasn't worked in a lot of cases. So this is, whether it's a sea change, whether someone met their asking price, I don't know the particulars. Not really that concerned about it, to be honest with you. But it is the first time this has happened, so that's why it's significant. Again, if you're a fan going, yeah, man, it, you know, I still remember the 11-game losing streak. That wasn't that much fun. I'm still kind of annoyed they didn't spend this offseason. That hasn't changed. You can still be annoyed, But this is why it's important.
Yeah, I would go as far as to say, too, like the Caps have had a jersey patch. I think it's TikTok right now for years. And when they announced that, it did not make me bat an eye.
Right.
I didn't break stride. I didn't care about it. We wouldn't have talked about it on the show. It's a nothing burger. This is different because it goes against what this team has been known for years and years and years. And when we're trying to get any kind of inclination and indication that we can about where the ownership group is at this moment, it's a tell that maybe, just maybe, some things could be shifting, and maybe the next stop is getting off the Metro at the let's get naming rights for the ballpark stop. Mm-hmm. You know, we just got off the train at Jersey Patches today. If we hop back on one stop up, how do we know it's not Pepsi Park, you know, coming in 2 months or something? Although I hope it would be Coca-Cola Classic, respectfully. They do have Coca-Cola at the ballpark.
Which is nice.
It's the right way to go.
I wouldn't want the change, then you got to, I don't want to go down that road.
Nobody wants to deal with that. Spencer Nussbaum, who's going to join us today at 6 o'clock from the Washington Post, wrote a story today about the Nats, which I found fascinating. You should read this. It's really, really good. And again, you should listen at 6 when he joins us. But his piece was on the fact that most teams in Major League Baseball have a device that helps their hitters train that the Nationals do not have. I'll just read from his synopsis. Almost every team in baseball, from the Yankees and Dodgers down to the Marlins, White Sox, and Rockies. So if they're spending on something and you're not, that's a big problem. Have invested in the fanciest pitching machine available. The Nats still don't have one. And obviously they didn't come right out and say they didn't get it based on cost, but it's $500,000. And they're one of the only teams, maybe the only team, that the Post just couldn't confirm all the other teams, but they confirmed at least 25 teams do have it. And so if you read the piece, the idea is this is something that hitters are telling him in the story would be a great benefit to them. They already use technology available at their disposal that's a couple $100 a season where they can put on the goggles like Jaden Daniels does, and they can see every pitch that Aaron Nola throws from where he throws it right before a game. And so there's nothing he can throw with his spin rate velocity that they haven't watched 1,000 times before the game if they choose to. But this machine allows you to actually stand in the cage for timing, where it's almost like something I did at Funland years ago.
Yeah, you've seen these versions of it, right? Where you can, quote unquote, face Greg Maddux.
Yeah, face Randy Johnson, kind of. CC Sabathia.
Yeah, but now they're good.
Hacks. Mm-hmm. And it's real, though. It's not the one you used at Planet Fun in Fredericksburg.
Right.
But it's like a screen where the guy pitches, and it's about timing, and it's his exact pitches. And if you spend $500,000, you can actually have the at-bats before the game that give you the answers to the answer key better, right? The Nats are maybe the only team, but one of, at most, only 5 teams based on what the Post can find out that does not have this. And this was an alarm that went off for me because it's what I always talk about. We should absolutely have the conversation about how few prospects they've churned out, their draft history, their development history. But what I always ask is if what we see getting spent on doesn't give them a chance, how do we know the stuff they're asking for behind the scenes to develop players gives them a great chance? How do we know that if the best developmental crew from Atlanta or the Dodgers or anywhere else comes in here with the same resources and tools that they would make it work? I don't think we know that, and it's just something I'm always bringing up, and I think this is actual evidence, potentially, that here's a tool that everybody knows can help us develop guys, and they don't have it.
Now, there are certain elements of technology that some guys don't like. So, for example, this is great reporting. In this story, the VR headsets that Alex Call swears by as he's cut his strikeout rate in half, he loves it. Nathaniel Lowe goes, it's not for me. And it's not going to be for everybody. Some guys are going to see it and be uncomfortable and don't think it really helps, and they'd rather study video or do this, that, and the other. Totally fine. But some guys like it. Some guys it benefits. Some guys it helps. And organizations have quickly seen the value in this thing, right? Where it's a subscription-based model, and as you said, costs about $500,000 a year. And it seems worth it enough for everybody to do it because you've already spent X amount of dollars on your payroll. This is basically, if you break it down per man, a fraction of a dollar on each individual person to have them perform up to or exceed that contract. It's a pretty reasonable spend when you think about it that way.
I want him to take the jersey patch money and buy this thing.
There you go.
Buy a couple of them.
The ARP Traject Arc or whatever that thing's called.
Put it on my tab. Get a couple of those over on Nats Park's batting cage level that everyone can see through the glass to from the Terra Club. All right, next, our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. I saw a movie that was fantastic. We're Grant and Danny. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on the new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today. Danny, I went and saw F1, the movie. A movie that you should see in theaters. To go full Kevin McCarthy on you, you got
to
see it in IMAX.
You have to see it in IMAX. Right.
And I'm doing a bit, but I may. Probably not going to be able to, if I'm being very candid with you, because we've got a baby coming imminently. If there's a way, like, let's say the baby's not here and next weekend, like, we're into next week, 7 days from now, there's a really good chance I've seen that movie in IMAX. I'm just going to let you know that right here and right now. It's a fantastic movie theater experience. Danny, there are a lot of race scenes where you're sitting in the cockpit of a Formula One car. What do they call that? The driver's seat?
I guess, yeah.
The noise audibly, mm-hmm. The visuals, the rumbling in the theater. I mean, I'm getting chills thinking about it. It is fantastic. I saw it in basically like IMAX Lite, like one of these RPX experiences, the best I could find at the time when I was able to escape the house and get to the theater. Brad Pitt's great, just playing the hero who is kind of a jerk and is very handsome, and that's like a reoccurring funny thing throughout the movie. I did not know this actor at all. Damson Idris, do you know this guy?
No file.
He's apparently in, Bishop loves this show. It's called Snowfall or something like that.
Okay.
But he was here at PGC randomly not long ago, and people were getting pictures with him. And now I wish it would have been after F1, because I would have been first in line. He's awesome. He was great. And you know who kills in this movie is Javier Bardem, who all he is a great actor.
People sleep on that dude. He is good in everything.
It's just basically it's an action movie with a cheesy story.
Yeah.
Let's give it one more shot. You know, that kind of thing. So to have these really good acting performances elevates the product a ton. It's got everything you want. But I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of people that go, oh, that sounds fun. I'll stream that. Top Gun Maverick. Normally Tom Cruise movies.
Mm-hmm.
But Mission Impossible, this. Like, these are the kind of films. It was filmed for IMAX, by the way. That's why I want to see it in IMAX. Whatever millimeters Kevin McCarthy's always talking about.
Sure.
I got to go see it in that way.
When he sits down super serious, he's like, now that was shot in 1500.
Exactly.
But and I'm like, and the other movie people are like, totally.
But you get what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean.
I comped it to the junkies today. They were talking about it, and I called in this morning on my way to the doctor. I comped it to, if you've ever gone to King's Dominion back in the day and we're in the Days of Thunder ride.
Yeah.
When you're in the chair and it's like the 4D or whatever, it's like, and they're like doing the tires and you're just like moving around. You don't get that full experience because the chairs aren't doing that, but it's pretty close.
So here's why I'm actually really interested. And it does look awesome. I was trying to convince my 11-year-old we should see that instead of what we ended up seeing, something that he wanted to see, but whatever. This is really interesting to me. This is Apple's first blockbuster. Apple.
Home run.
Right? So, you know, the $3 trillion market cap Apple, the they make your phones and their computers that I'm using and everything under the sun, the little charge cords.
To be clear, like they started a film company like a Fox or a Searchlight or whatever.
Yeah, so they've got their own TV deal with Apple TV+. I mean, they've had several hits, Ted Lasso, Severance, a million others. But this is the first time they've done this.
Yeah.
So they don't have the normal distribution company. So there are all these different people in the industry that have their hand in the pie. So what they did is they financed the movie, made the movie. Some people say it's as much as $300 million, right? Then they're paying a fee to Warner Brothers to put it in all the different places. Because Apple's got Apple TVs. They could just put it there whenever they feel like it or whatever. But they don't have the theater relationships and whatever that means. So they're paying a fee to Warner Brothers, then all the big promotional stuff. So this was their first foray into trying to do what Netflix does, except Netflix puts it on Netflix. And they're putting it in theaters. So Apple put a movie in theaters, and it's going to make north of, I think it's almost $60 million domestically, close to $80 million internationally.
I thought it did like $130 million this weekend.
In the opening weekend. Yeah. So it did great. And that's kind of their sigh of relief, but nobody's ever done this before.
Well, they need to do it more. Mm-hmm. I mean, the movie's a ton of fun. You should absolutely go see it in theaters. And what I realized is, I've always known this, but this was conviction for me. Jerry Bruckheimer, who I wouldn't recognize if he was sitting on my lap. But the name is synonymous with so much stuff that
produces
I love.
Produces smashes.
Film and television producer, born in September of 1943 in Detroit. He's an old guy now.
Yeah.
He's much older than my father is. Graduated from high school in the early 60s, this guy. All he does is produce films that I love. Like, his When you go to his IMDb page, here's his known for, by the way. Who do you think of when you hear these movies? Top Gun, Maverick, Armageddon, Remember the Titans. I mean, those are some of my favorite
movies.
He
produces Grants.
I mean, come on, dude. You know? This guy is the best.
Smashes.
I'm pretty sure Hans Zimmer, like the all-time leading music guy.
Yeah, it's John Williams, Hans Zimmer, basically vying for
Hans Zimmer
GOAT.
Did the original score for this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like, Apple's like, all right, we got some checks to write. Who wants to take on the project? Brad Pitt can star in it. Hans Zimmer's going to do some music. Jerry Bruckheimer's going to produce. Like, the Avengers assembled. I'm just asking you to go eat some popcorn and watch the damn thing in the AC.
Yeah, buddy.
I think you might like it. Danny Hutier, give me an F1 viewing.
I've been trying to do it. I did everything I could short of just insisting to my son that we do this. But
Your son will love it, by the way.
He wanted to see The Phoenician Scheme, the Wes Anderson dry-humored film. This one, by the way, you know, it's fine. It's very Wes Anderson-y.
Probably sucked like they all suck.
No, he has smashes. Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, Royal Tenenbaums are some of my favorite movies ever. He hasn't made one that's gotten to that level yet, and this one doesn't either. It's fine. Benicio del Toro is really good, and there's several running gags that are well done, but it's that dry, Sahara Desert dry sense of humor.
Yeah, just terrible. I agree.
No, really, but you misunderstand it.
I'm doing it.
Just because you don't get it. No, I'm kidding.
Right. That's what it is, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
All the Wes Anderson people that want to tell you how good these movies are, they just want to tell us how we don't get it, and they're just smart. And maybe they are. I don't know. That's hilarious that your son wanted to see that.
He was desperate to see
it. But I'm telling you, if you need me to call him and talk him into it, he would love this movie. How could he not? It's like being in a racing video game, basically. But Brad Pitt looks awesome.
The other thing, by the way, about that, just as a quick side, you know Brad Pitt's 61 years old?
Sounds right.
Like, that guy's 61 years old.
Well, the wife said, when's he going to start playing old guys? And I was like, well, number one, he doesn't really have to yet because he doesn't look old.
There's no rush.
But that's kind of what this was. This was like the... Really? This guy?
Give it one more shot.
Yeah. He's washed up. And it's like, there's no one else I'd rather have in that car. You know, that kind
of
thing.
One of those things, of course.
Beltway Blitz is next. We'll start the segment giving away tickets to see Adam Sandler at Capital One Arena in September.